Well, hey, talking about corporates and beautiful hairstyles, here we are. Welcome back to another episode of the Live Your Dreams podcast. I'm Joe Gowalis, your host, alongside my amazing co-host,
Chris Victor.
We are very excited today. We have an incredible guest on. This individual really has, I would say, changed the independent film scene in the New York City area. He's an incredibly impressive individual. He's been not only somebody who kind of broke through on the independent level, he's now doing some pretty, really mainstream stuff. I mean, you've gotten to be so big, I can almost say you've created the Stanulis empire.
From I'm so big, I almost couldn't fit through a door. That's how big I'm yet. I didn't ask for this, but I'm on this course.
He's getting bigger.
I
might be bigger by the time I
leave. I mean, leave. He's going to be like, whoa, look at me. I'm doing everything.
Yeah, it's funny.
No, but seriously, man. Honestly, I mean, you started. Well, again, for those of you who don't know him, please welcome Mr. Steve Stanulis.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Dear friend of ours. Yes. Talented man. So.
I feel like I got to incorporate this. I've heard so much about it, and I know you guys are doing great. And I'm excited to be on.
No, thank you, Steve. Yeah. Appreciate you. We know you're a busy guy.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, you're always doing fantastic. I mean, you've started an entire brand. You came out and you talked to us a little bit about this if you want. You started your career as an NYPD officer. You came in through a very unique way,
sure,
of studying and getting involved in the film industry.
Sure.
And you went from doing, guest stars on The Sopranos and some pretty cool shows, mm-hmm. and then starting to walk into this independent world,
right,
and becoming a force. I mean, you're not just making an occasional independent film. You're consistently putting out really well-made, well-distributed independent films with amazing cast members, amazing worldwide distribution, and they're getting bigger and bigger and better every year. It's really impressive what you've done.
You're motivating. Thank you. I just got bigger.
Again, I know.
Again, you might have to, loop me through the door later.
No, we mentioned our life before about mentors. And
right.
Yeah, I don't think you know this, but you're also one of my mentors.
Oh, is that
right? And I met you in class years ago.
Yes, that's how we met.
But what you do and the way you do consistently do the work, like Joey just mentioned, is quite amazing.
That's awesome. I appreciate that. I'm very humbled. Yeah, especially coming from a period like you guys. I always laugh when we talk about this, when we've talked about this off camera. I always looked at my life as very Forrest Gumpian. You know what I mean? And I just happened to be always at the right place at the right time. And usually the less I gave a fuck.
Yeah.
And, to put it quite frankly, the more things happened. You know what I mean? And that's just the way everything's kind of fell for me since inception.
That's great advice. It's like, when you're trying to force things, it never happens. But when you just let it flow, why not keep it?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't even know. Can I say
that? No. What if you want?
Yes. I mean, from going back to the dancing days.
Yeah.
I was just telling a story yesterday, and it was funny because I actually forgot about it. But my first day of college, I had a sociology class, first day. And I was always into working out back then. And I sat next to this guy, and we kind of hit it off because he worked out too. And he's like, I got to work tonight. So I'm like, yeah, what do you do? He's like, I work at Chippendales. I'm like, get out of here. No way, right? He's like, why? Are you interested? And I'm like, yeah. So I go with him to the show. And basically, there's 400 girls. The club was called Escapes in Merrick. It was 400 girls screaming like they're rock stars. So at the end, he's like, you want in? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you could dance, right? I'm like, yeah, I could. Yeah, of course I could dance. Meanwhile, I couldn't fuck him. So again, I didn't go back to the whole, I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Most people are afraid to fail.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? So they're more afraid to fail than to succeed.
Yes.
Or, they have people make fun of them or whatever. So, again, my advice all the time is just do it. Don't talk shit. Mm-hmm. Create shit. Right?
Yeah. I mean, we talk about that a lot behind the scenes when we always have conversations.
Yeah.
We talk about most people just talk about doing things and never take action. Because I think it's what you said. And we actually do talk about this a lot. We say, it's not that people are lying. It's that they're paralyzed by fear.
Yep.
If it's not perfect, they don't move forward.
Right.
So they just are in this perpetual kind of never moving forward
edge. Right. And life is fast. Like
life
we were just talking about off camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Life goes, you know, and again, you know, we see each other every day. Not the three of us, but in the mirror individually. You look at yourself, you're like, all right, oh, good today, whatever. Well, you look at yourself in a picture from 10 years ago. You've changed a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or old films of yourself.
Yeah.
So like I said, just, you know, life's not going to wait. So just do what you got to do. You know what I mean?
Well, talk about not waiting. That brings you in and you get to be a recognized police officer for a couple of years. You do great over there. And then you know, get an injury and you leave that world.
Right.
And then you decide to, where you two met, you decide to, again, no fear. You jump into the world of acting. You start taking acting courses. Right. What kind of brought you from being a dancer to a police officer and then saying, you know what? I want to be on TV. I want to be a film actor. This is what I want to do with my life.
Well, again, it was, again, going back for the 10th time with the whole Forrest Gumpy
thing. Yeah, yeah.
By happenstance, I had a chance to work with Leonardo DiCaprio and security.
Yeah,
because I was still a cop, and they were more for cops. They were looking for big bodyguard guys. And I was late meeting him. I was coming from a bachelorette party. And, I was waiting for him. And when I met him, he was like just after Titanic. He was like one of the biggest stars in Hollywood. And I'm a stripper cop. And I have no ambition to do anything other than do what I'm doing. And, it was tough breaking the ice. And I had torn my ACL at the time in the NYPD. And he's like, oh, wow, I tore my ACL doing Basketball Diaries.
Yeah.
You mind if I see your scar? So I'm like, yeah, right, as long as you don't mind the G-string I'm wearing. And I fucking pull my pants down. And, I'm sitting there, everybody's laughing. And, that was my
arm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That got me into the whole circle.
Sure.
So I ended up going to a party. And I sat with this guy, just, again, talking, just, you know, you schmooze.
Yeah.
His name was Dylan Sellers. He's a Brooklyn guy, and we kind of connected. And he's like, I'm doing this movie I'm producing called The Replacements. It has Keanu Reeves, Gene Hackman. At the time, it was supposed to be Sandra Bullock, but it ended up not. But something happened there. But he's like, you play football? I'm like, yeah, I played in high school. So he's like, you'd be great for the backup quarterback. I said, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So next week, I'm in Baltimore in Raven Stadium, and I'm working with Keanu Reeves and Gene Hackman. I had no fucking idea what I was doing. No, back to one. What was that? So, I got a line.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, now I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm working with DiCaprio. And he was working at a time with, getting ready to do Gangs of New York.
Sure. Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I somehow I get involved with that, and I'm playing in Native.
That's right, yeah.
With Daniel Day-Lewis. So I get to hang out with Daniel Day-Lewis as a butcher, right? And he ends up winning an Oscar.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this is fucking great, you know? But I said, let me go to school.
Yeah.
Because at some point, I'm going to get offered something that I'm not going to be able to handle.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's when, fast forward, I decided to go to HB Studios, and that's where we met. We started taking, technique class and all these scene study, all this stuff like that. And then the guy who introduced me to everyone, he got indicted for embezzling everybody's money.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of his, people that he was involved with was another cop. But everybody knew me, everybody thought it was me. So all my fucking access went away.
Gone.
So now I had the bug, and now I had to audition. I'm like, what the fuck? I got to audition.
Back to the bottom.
You know what I mean? So I had to be like everybody else.
Yeah,
So I mean, God knows if that didn't happen, where we're today. But, so that's how the whole thing started. But I got in by total, happenstance.
No, that's fantastic. And again, but you were open to being there.
Right.
And that not actually caring, not caring, but being, I guess ballsy enough to say, I'm going to go out there and to show my ACL scar. I'm not afraid of that.
Right.
That takes an I don't care attitude, and I'm going to be myself.
Right.
It's a huge thing to do that. That's,
Right. And then, like I said, I at some point when I was with Dylan, I could have said, I play football, but, I don't really.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, absolutely. you want me to go? Totally, I could do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, you know, any other opportunity, you know, I could have taken it so many other ways.
Sure.
You know, like if I would have got there early, like, oh my God, I got to beat Leo. I got to.
Oh, yeah.
The fact I got there late.
Yeah.
The fact that I had no preconceived notions.
Sure.
The fact that I was myself. The fact that I took off my pants.
That, by saying yes and being honest and, you know, just letting it all hang out there.
For a little pun intended.
No pun intended.
That's right.
That's what made you live what most people's dreams are to be in this industry. And I honestly shouldn't say most people, but a lot of people seem to be very intrigued by this industry.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's definitely fantasy land, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's definitely, you know, people like when I think of Hollywood and, you know, it's so not like that behind the curtain.
Yeah.
I mean, no paper had attention behind to the man behind the curtain. Yeah. But no, like I said, it's definitely like looked at as super sexy.
No. Yeah.
The glam, yep. The fame, the money, the red carpets. Yeah. I mean, who won part of it?
No, everybody finds it exciting. And again, you got to be, you know, coming up and now you're auditioning. You got to be part of one of the biggest shows at the time. You had a role in The Sopranos. And you, as you talk about going back to the beginning, you're playing a police officer.
Yes.
And you get to work with Gandolfini in that scene. James Gandolfini, Tony Soprano, an amazing actor, an icon at this time, really is so good. How was that experience? Because that must have been a lot of very
interesting. Yeah. Well, the funny thing is we had the same acting teacher. So Harold Guskin is.
Okay.
So right off the bat, when he knew I was with Harold, I said, Harold, when I got on set, I told him, Harold, send us love. He kind of embraced me.
Sure, fair. Yeah.
Which was great. So that broke the ice because as soon as he realized I was one of Harold's students. So that was great.
Yeah.
But I had read for a much bigger part. I was supposed to play Tony's bodyguard.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, yep.
I think his name, the character's name was, I think, Victor Nunziano, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. The guy he beats him up in the one episode.
Yeah. That's the role. And again, what happened was they wanted to go with a real much bigger guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Muscular guy. So, yeah, so they gave me that. And again, it was cool anyway. I got to work with Gandolfini. I still get some residuals. It's probably about $2.
Sure, yeah.
But no, again, just to be say, yeah, I was on The Sopranos.
Yeah, kidding me? Yeah.
It was definitely iconic.
Yeah.
And even the table read was awesome.
Sure.
You know, because everybody's around. You know, everybody stands up like he stands up.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm James Gandolfini. I play Tony Soprano. really?
Yeah.
You know, and then obviously it starts, it goes down.
Yeah.
I'm Edie Falco. I play, and I'm like, wow, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty.
So that was another wow moment, you know?
What an experience, though. I mean, that show is just iconic. I mean,
it is
one of the most iconic shows.
It really is.
And I'm sure somewhere there's some Reddit forum and people talking about your character. It's like, you know, people love that show. I mean, really, it was a rabid fan base.
Oh, my God.
And even the new generation love the show. I mean, it's that good. The writing is transcended.
It is.
At this point, now generations that are watching it that are different because, you know, what did it come out in 99? Kids now are in, you know, people were born that are now, you know, adults.
I know.
They are adults that are watching the show. So, I mean, it has transcended generations.
Yeah.
Great.
No, 100%. And look how many people have tried to emulate it and they failed.
And it's almost impossible. I mean, you work with a lot of these people too, which has been really fortunate that you've gone to the point for being a supporting, going on an episode of the show,
mm-hmm.
and you worked with a lot of the main players on these shows.
Yes, ironically enough, it went full circle.
Right, yeah.
There's probably not many that I haven't worked with.
From
Pastor to Sirico.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. God rest his soul. Shrippa.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously, oh my God. Federico.
Federico, yeah.
Lilo.
Yeah, Lilo, yeah.
The list goes on. I mean, I don't want to keep naming because I'm going to probably.
No. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, pretty much everything went full circle.
You were very good friends with John Gallagher.
Yes.
And he was a great director, did a lot of great films. He was very close with a lot of those Sopranos actors.
Yes, he gave a lot of them their breaks.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Imperioli.
Yep.
Sirico. I want to say Pastor as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely, without a doubt.
Did you form that relationship from that time?
No, I knew John prior. We were working on a different project that never happened. And then we just kind of became good friends. Mm-hmm. And, and then there was a lot of debaucheries.
Yeah.
late nights at a place called Saga we would spend on 39th and Lex. But, yeah, we had a lot of good time.
He was a very impressive guy. I mean, right? I know you guys were good friends.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, like I said, I was blessed because he got into a, he got almost killed in fire.
Yeah.
And, it was great because we did a movie called The Network.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I never forget talking to him on the phone. And I said, John, I still want you to direct it if you're up to it. And I said, I'll give you, whatever I said, like 6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
To get on your feet. And if you promise me you'll do that, you're directing it. And he did. And he never let me forget that.
That's right.
He said that was my, my inspiration and my drive to get better.
Yeah.
And, I mean, to the day almost, when he passed, he always let me know that.
So, yeah.
And I'm like, John, it's fine. It's okay. No worries. But yeah, he always appreciated that.
When I read that screening.
Yeah, we had a premiere of that. That was fantastic.
It
was
2013.
Yeah, it was a Soho film last 2014. Yeah, that was great. I remember that. Yeah. We'll talk about 10 years, how fast that goes.
I know,
but look at yourself 10 years prior. It's about 10 years ago. I mean, we've all been hanging out for a very long time.
All those people we just mentioned.
Yeah.
Scythe.
And he's great. I he's a phenomenal.
All the way.
Yep. I mean,
D'Onofrio.
But D'Onofrio, that was the deli that he did with Gallagher.
Yeah, that was a great,
phenomenal.
Yes.
So, maybe.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, Joe chose...
He did a lot of movies.
Substantial amount of credits.
He's done great.
But I mean, yourself then, you obviously you're surrounded by this great group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you decide to kind of take your career into your own hands. And I think you started with one of you ended up making Samuels Productions, which does fantastic. I mean, you guys did so many great films. But I think you started with Longshot Louie. Is that the first film you're coming
to? Well, we started doing a couple shorts.
Okay, yeah.
And then we did a film called The Invisible Life of Thomas Lynch.
Okay, yes, yes.
Which became later on Great Kills.
Yes.
But it's weird because, when I was going out for the auditions, like we all do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You start to get typecast. So I always thought to go for, the gangster.
Yeah.
Which, I guess I can look, but... the gangster, the police officer, and I'm like, man, I could do more, And I remember, which wasn't done often back then, I said, I'm going to produce my own thing.
Yeah.
And, it was looked down upon, believe it or not. Back then it was like, if you're an actor, you act.
Sure.
If you're a producer, you direct. But, so the funny part was when I made, it was a movie called Dick and Jane.
Yes.
With John Bianco.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Everybody was like, listen, don't give yourself a producer credit because it looks like you're almost self-promoting.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So in the first three projects I did, I don't even have myself down as a producer.
Sure.
Because that shows you how times.
I assume. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And things come full circle because everybody was like, and I just like, why would you sit and wait for the phone to ring from your agent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why not like create certain things? You know what I mean? And show your range. Or show you could do other things. I think Vin Diesel is the same. Oh, that's how
he did.
That's how he
got that. He did that short, multi-face
short film.
Multi.
Steven Spielberg.
Spielberg. He got the Iron Giant. He got three films from that.
Right.
He did Saving Private Ryan after that.
And Pitch Black and the Iron Giant.
And became like a superstar. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but I was, it was like taboo.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really taboo to do your own stuff. So that's why I'm like, listen, okay, I'll give myself a fake name.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, whatever.
And you did produce it, you did act in it,
so yeah. But like I said, that just shows you how things come full circle. Even back in, like I said, 99, if you were on TV, you looked at it as less than a movie star.
Yes, crazy. Yeah.
It's very, I mean, that's why when Brad Pitt did Friends, it was such a big deal.
Are you kidding me?
Brad Pitt's magnitude would be seen on a sitcom, no less. But now
Al Pacino is on The Hunter.
Now, the productions are just as good as that, if not better.
Yeah.
Hollywood film. And you know what? why go from film to see what I'm going to be doing on my next film, where I could go on a series and maybe be on it for the next 10 years?
Yeah, exactly. Consistently.
And, you know what I mean? I'd be happy with that. I don't know if you guys.
They say it was The Sopranos that changed that whole
mindset
and quality level, because the HBO just took that show to another tier,
right.
You know, especially towards those later seasons. Then you got Breaking Bad that followed that up, and, you know, everything kind of came in that wave after The Sopranos came out there. But that was that first one. Maybe Oz a little bit before. Oz and Sopranos are really those two shows that, like, catapulted television into being acceptable.
Yeah.
And then you see, you know, Matthew McConaughey doing shows on HBO. I mean, did that again.
Detective.
Which people saw that. That research, that took him.
I think him and Woody Harrelson.
It took Matthew McConaughey again from going from, you know, a rom-com kind of guy, an action star,
right,
to being looked at as one of the best serious actors
he was great at
in that generation, which is great. I mean, that was,
he was great.
He has done everything now.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I mean, now it's equivalent.
100% it is. I mean, streaming has got even, look at what the caliber of star now that is on these Netflix productions, Hulu, Amazon, you name it, it's just gotten, every channel's gotten good. You know, it's really been quite incredible. And it's kind of interesting, you know, as independent producers, as us that make our own films, how do you feel now? The door is open for a lot of opportunity. You yourself have some great projects out that we can talk about in a minute that are out on these streaming platforms. Mm-hmm. How do you feel this kind of open world has benefited, or do you think it's taken away a little bit from our artistic integrity?
I think both.
Okay.
I think both. I think it's never been easier, or you've never had so many platforms.
Sure, yeah.
To present your work, distribute your work and around your world and get it out there, where 15 years ago you would never have that opportunity. With all these platforms, I mean, so that's amazing. And even like YouTube and TikTok and, you know, all these certain, you know, again, that's amazing. And it gives you so many opportunities to showcase yourself.
Sure, yeah.
Whether you're doing podcasts, whether you're doing whatever, short TikTok dance,
whatever
you're doing, or making, you know, legitimate films that you could just distribute on all these platforms. But to me, today, the traditional movie star in the next 10 years is done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because the days of waiting for the next, you know, Tom Cruise movie. My kids, they don't go to the movies. They just watch YouTube. They stream. They watch, you know, they binge watch something, whatever. But why go to a movie theater when I can sit home and watch my 80-inch screen TV, surround sound, save... You know, if I go to a movie with my three kids and my wife, and they want popcorns, Twizzlers, whatever.
Yeah, plus $20 ticket for the movie.
Right, you're talking $200.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So the point is,
almost buy another TV.
Right. I think in 10 years from now, I would be surprised if the movie theaters are even open.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But again, the shift is just. You know, if you would have told me that, you know, 20 years ago, I'd be like, you're crazy.
No, I love going to movie theaters.
Well, we're a bit old. I know, but I'm waiting for films to come out. I don't like waiting. So I can imagine the new generation, when they're so used to content coming out,
they're not going to wait at all.
And then some of these movies come out, and in a week, 7 days are on demand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, everything now is that you used to window things differently. Now everything's kind of simultaneous. It's a different world now.
It really is. And like I said, the next generation, and the generation after that, they're not even going to be like, ooh, Tom Cruise, who's that? You know?
No, you're absolutely right. And again, you know, people are saying, when you guys mentioned, you know, 80-inch screen TVs, it's just going to get bigger and better.
Oh, yeah.
And the quality sound, you can like bring, you can go to Best Buy and you can spend about $600 and get a decent-sized TV and a sound bar.
Right.
And you can watch a good movie on it. I mean,
if we even own a TV anymore. I mean, you can watch
it on tablets.
They don't care.
Yeah.
Phone.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, the answer is yes, you're right.
Yeah.
You can, you know, again, I still like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I still like the big screen, the surround sound. But again, I don't think certain next generations are going to be quite there. I don't know.
Different market.
I hope them.
Yeah. No, I agree. And
so it's great.
Yeah.
It's great and sad at the same time. if that.
Yeah, because demand is dictating the supply. So
right,
you either get what they're looking for.
Right, you either get, you know, go with change. What do they say? Go with change, you get run over.
I mean, well, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've all been at the beginning of this digital revolution, in the, especially the independent world. You know, you ever used to have to get these, you know, the Reds and the Aries, you had to spend so much money on getting these cameras together.
Right.
The quality, you said the entry point now has gotten so much easier.
Right.
Well, I mean, great companies like Blackmagic are creating these amazing cinema cameras you can get at an affordable price.
Right.
Where before, I mean, it used to take a lot of money. It was, you know, you go before digital revolution in the 90s, you have to get a movie on film. That's a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, you are not just
going to be right. You had to worry about wasted film.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 21-year-old kid with a good idea couldn't make a movie back then.
No.
Now they could
right.
do that. You can go to B&H and buy a Blackmagic, you know, 6K, and you get yourself a beautiful-looking image. It's incredible what you can do and these new companies have done for everybody. I mean, even the iPhone is incredible. It's really changing everything.
And don't forget AI, bro.
AI's,
it's another big fucking animal coming. So
it's changing everything right now.
Yeah, everything. Yeah, at some point, anybody is going to be able to spit an idea into AI.
Yep.
Basically, they come up with a fucking great script. And at some point, you're going to be able to say, I want to do a movie where Leo, Humphrey Bogart, and Elvis are the leads, and Marilyn Monroe. And you're going to be able to do that.
Yep.
You're going to be able to do it. And that's not far away.
No, I think we're almost there right now.
6 months ago, AI was an infant.
Yeah.
You know, it's now a Yale grad.
Yeah.
And it's every day, it's getting bigger and bigger and crazier and crazier and smarter and smarter. So, again, I'm just...
No, you're going to prove it.
Yeah, no, it's turning.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying it's true. And people that don't... I'm okay. But I'm just saying is... Yeah, that's another whole wave coming.
No, you're absolutely right. And it feels like you said, a lot of people, especially in our industry, are taking the they're putting a veil over. They don't want to see it.
Right.
Instead of understanding that this is coming.
Right.
And in a way, you know, think about this. When you just said
like a tsunami, bro.
It's gonna be huge. It's gonna take over and knock people over.
Tsunami.
It is. And when you mentioned Elvis and Bogart, there may be a point where the estates of these family members of these people, as you know, we will sell their rights.
Right.
There may be a number where eventually, you know, the estate of Elvis Presley, the estate of Humphrey Bogart goes, you know what? You paid us enough. We'll sell you the rights
right.
to use that image in AI.
Right.
That can very easily happen.
Right.
I mean, and once that happens,
yeah,
things have changed.
Everything's changed.
Everything changes.
For writers, for actors, for, yeah, a lot of people.
Where do you think, again, this is just a loaded question, not holding you to this, the future of our industry? Is it there? Where do you see it being? Especially in the independent world, are we going to be kind of failing sideways? So we walk off the side of the cliff, or are we going to have some kind of lifeboat at the end of the fall?
That is a great question. Again, as long as there's regular people that want to be forget about life for a while, and you know, want to mind numb. And, you know, escape a bad day or just decompress, there's always going to be room for good content, I believe. I would like to see distribution be policed a lot more.
Yeah.
That's where I think creatives get fucked.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because the distributors, we've talked about this, and I've talked about it openly, and we've
you've
always been. It's the Wild West, and there's no policing it.
Yeah,
and a lot of independent filmmakers don't have the money, so when they get screwed by these distributors, they can't hire a forensic accountant. They don't have the money.
Yeah,
because they're counting on, you know, on these guys, meaning distributors to take their project and, you know, and do the right thing by it.
Yeah, yeah.
But where do I start a business where I could take 20% doing nothing? You laid out all the money.
Yeah.
Right? You guys laid out all the money. You pull your hard sweat, blood and tears. You raised the money. You edited it.
Yeah.
You did everything for it. Paid actors, paid crew, whatever. You come to me I say, all right, I'll take it. I'll take 20%. You just give me 20%. I give you nothing back.
No,
right? Yeah. You don't get anything back.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I upcharge you.
Yeah.
With everything. So by the time, you know, any money's made, you know, so I would say, so in the first quarter you made, well, let's say you make it even 100 grand.
Yeah.
Right? You made 100 grand. All of a sudden you're like, all right, cool, I made 100. You get a check for like 3. And then, you know, it looks all, you know, we did PR, we had an upload, and there's no policing
that. No.
And until that's done, or until that's changed, you know, the creatives and on the independent side. I'll tell you what, some studios fucking still do it.
They do. Oh, yeah.
I don't think that doesn't happen in studios.
Yeah.
So if they can do that in studios, I know people that made Oscar-winning films or Oscar-nominated films.
Yeah.
They got beat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm not going to mention names, but you might even know some of the names.
Yeah, sure.
And he hasn't seen the money yet as a producer.
Yeah.
And the movie's made millions. So if they could get fucked,
yeah.
What's the guy who was just spent every last dime, put his blood, sweat, and tears on a film? He's got nothing else to do for post as far as P&A.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, is it trusting, you know, these mid-level distribution companies, and, you know, he's got no recourse. He can only get what they give him.
Let me ask you a question on that. Do you think, what about self-distribution? Do you see that in our future where we can self-distribute and not need these players?
Again, I hope so.
Yeah.
That's really up to the streaming platforms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you have to have it in. You'd have to have it. In other words, all these distributors have ins with every single one, right?
Yeah, so you build relationships.
No, you could definitely build relationships. But what I'm saying is, are they going to deal with you, giving them one movie every 8 months?
Is that right?
Yeah. Or are they going to deal with me saying, hey, here's 40 films this month. I'll give you another 40 next month.
Yeah.
Because I have no downside taking 40 films. I throw everything against the wall. And if 3 of them stick, great. If not, whatever. I didn't lose anything.
Yeah.
The only thing I lost is uploading your film, whatever that cost is. So, again, I'd like to see that policed a little better. I think that's where independent films go to the left, because when you have a lot of investors, they invest, you know, good faith and whatever, they just don't see their money back.
People, you know, investors, when they hear movies, they're like, yeah, get me, yeah, independent film. Yeah.
So that's the
problem. No, you're 100% right. And that does need to be policed. And when you brought up self-distribution, what Steve's example was, self-distribution really is just aggregators, like you said. It's not really self-distribution.
Right.
They're throwing 40 films at it. Yeah. So where is self-distribution now? It's almost impossible at this point. And again, without that policing, we are done.
Right.
And that is the whole thing. If we don't have somebody in there to actually watch our money, we have no hope.
You're right.
That needs to be the exact change that, you know, we've talked about this. The creatives, it is almost impossible to get everybody on the same page.
Right.
It's very easy to stop providing products to some of these mid-tier distributors that need it. As long as we keep feeding them it, they're not going to change their ways.
Right.
You know, it's kind of scary at this
point. And again, you never get it to the point where you're going to, you know, ban all those.
No, it never will happen. No.
Because there's always going to be
somebody, yep.
Or be like, you know, that's going to either seize an opportunity and say, oh, well, now, you know, maybe it's a better time to do it. But no, that's not going to happen. So the problem is, to self-distribute, you'd have to have a contact at every single platform.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Every single one. And if you're not supplying a lot of content to them, they're not going to want to know you.
You see more of a future in the TV versus film?
Yes.
Yeah
absolutely. Without a doubt, for all the reasons we had named before.
Yeah.
There's more security as an actor.
The ad bod and all the...
Yeah. I think so.
Well, talking about that and going to the positive aspects
of it. Now that I fucking ruined everybody.
No.
Inspiration here.
What's great is, look, we are supposed to be encouraging people to follow our team.
Well, this is the truth.
No.
Navigate around.
Well, that's
what I meant before. Yep. Don't look behind the curtain.
Yeah, right, but this is important because a lot of people go in... We do live in the industry of dreams.
And there's so many people that jump in too quickly.
Right.
And they get burned because they didn't look first. They didn't understand.
Well, they want to believe.
They want to believe. These are important skills. Now, what you did, talking about finding the right people to partner up with, people you can trust, developing your own company, working with these right people, you have developed an amazing TV series alongside an amazing group of people. I'll let you talk more about them, called Great Kills right now. And that's actually streaming on Tubi. It was the first season, was one of Tubi's best streamed shows.
Yeah, it was actually well, yeah.
Yeah, you have an amazing group of people. James is an incredible director, the SLC. I mean, you got really strong people around you. Love to hear more about this, because this is what happens when you find the right people to get involved.
Yeah, no, and again, and you follow your dreams, right? So,
yeah.
So, you know, again, we came up with a post-it way of shooting. Because like I said, you know, when you're doing stuff without studio backing, investors here, you know, you need 100,000 an episode, 150,000 episode. You want to do how many? So again, we kind of created this mockumentary of a camera crew that follows around a hitman. And it's, you know, it's meant to look, you know, rough.
Yeah.
It's meant to look like a documentary. And again, we're able to shoot, you know, 10 episodes in 2 weeks.
That's great.
Because there's no lighting setups. Everything that takes time on set,
sure,
you don't have here.
Yeah.
There's no lines, so you can't say, all right, you fucked the line up. You just keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no tube shot, close up, wide shot. So we fly right through it. So again, that's why I always call it a post away shooting. But it's almost like what they do in the shadows.
Yeah.
Right.
Great show.
Which is doing well too.
Oh yeah.
With the vampires.
Yep.
With vampires.
Larry Hitman.
So I usually say The Office with a hitman, or what they do in the shadows.
Yeah.
But it's probably more what they do in the shadows. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a unique way of shooting. But yeah, I mean, like I said, sometimes the boom's in the shot, but it's done purposely.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, I mean, he's doing well. You know, we started shooting season 2.
That's right.
Which is my new suits look, the new hairstyle. There's a reason why. But no, and I mean, we brought Kathy Moriarty.
She's great.
Yeah. Who's doing an amazing job.
Chris is involved.
Yeah, I could attest. She's amazing.
Yeah, he was on set with us. By Lang, who's doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, great.
Eric's coming aboard. Roberts.
Yeah, he's great.
James D. Simone, who was in Bupkis.
Okay, yeah. Pete
Davidson. And again, a great crew of actors.
Yeah.
Who are seasoned improv actors. So yeah, I mean, I'm really happy. I've seen, sometimes when you shoot like that, you don't get the appreciation. It's almost like you don't. I hope this works.
I felt it.
Type of deal. You did?
Yeah. There.
Yeah. Thank you. But when I see the finished product, I already even watched, the playbacks.
Sure. Yeah.
I just let James. I trust him. He's gonna.
Yeah. He's a great art.
And sometimes he'll show me like a little scene, and I'm like, that actually was pretty fucking good. I thought it was like a nothing scene. So we're really excited. There's bigger platforms interested.
Sure.
Maybe we'll get somebody up front. Who knows?
Right. Right. That'd be great.
It's an asset again.
Or Mel Sher and everything.
Yeah, right. We're really excited about it.
That's great. And you got the James, SLC Punk, which was like huge.
Right.
Filming. That was a huge following. Your directors at the production, correct?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, James, I guess we did this film back in 2008.
Yeah.
So I know James, about 15 years.
Wow, yeah.
So, again, he knows me. He knows all my strengths, what I like to do. And so I don't even know what, the scenes are until I get the set.
You get there, yeah.
Because I just think it's easy. It makes it more genuine.
Sure, yeah.
So it's just like, hey, this is what's going to happen. And instead of coming up with stuff, it's just natural.
Sure.
Come up with stuff in your head when you know what you're supposed to be doing. So even like when I hear messages, it was a scene with my grandmother in season 1. And it's a sad, it was a sad message. And I never heard it until I actually heard it.
Wow, okay.
You know what I mean? So yeah,
my genuine feelings and everything that came out, was real, because it hit me in the moment, because I had no idea what she was going to say. It could have been bring over groceries.
Sure.
It could have been I need you to pick me up and take me for my, my bourbon.
Just
whatever she could, whatever,
good point. Anything, yeah.
But it was a sad message, and it hit home.
That's
right. And it played. But so I just show up, and this is what we're doing, and go.
And for everybody out there that doesn't know, Steve, being a great producer himself and his team, made sure this is now under the new interim agreement. SAG is doing so well right now.
Right.
And so people don't understand, actors, there is the ability to work. Producers, you could get out there.
Right.
And I just want to make that clear to everybody that this is done the right way,
right,
and the correct way. This
right. In fact, obviously when we announced we were shooting and it was announcing deadline and stuff, obviously you always get the people online,
you're
not supporting a strike. And I'm like, listen, dude, first of all, SAG wants you to be doing work like this. They're supporting it because they want you to work on projects that are not studio backed. That's your bargaining chip.
Yeah.
So even though it's great, I mean, I respect everybody that's on the picket line.
Yeah.
That's great. But most people, not all. Some actors go there to take a couple of selfies with their signs, post it on Instagram, and they're fucking out of there.
Yeah.
So what's more effective? Mm-hmm. Standing on a picket line for 5 minutes, say, I support the, and then go home and post every, post it like, or creating work, and giving. I think this cast, we have 50 people with this cast.
Yeah, that's great.
So, between the crew, the actors. Yeah, so I mean, that's the way to support SAG.
You're 100% right. And really, you've been doing this, again, you are the only people I've ever met that has consistently been producing, directing, acting in your company, putting out work for years. Yeah, you consistently, since we've done, I've always been putting out work. It's very impressive.
I appreciate that. You said, I mean, again, sometimes we try to go a little higher. The budgets, with the Chronicle and, and all those. But like I said, if we're having trouble raising for a particular time, whether it's a recession, whether it's, let's make something smaller. Let's how do we create something else? You know what I mean? And make it look good. And, that's the trick. Listen, what I love to be doing, a $50 million film. Now, of course, we all would.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But until that day comes, I'd rather be doing something.
Yes.
Yeah. Instead of sitting around waiting, for things to fall my way.
No. Both of you with the podcast. We got SAG sanction for the podcast. We have a podcast. We're not breaking the strike. We're having people's voices heard. Even in the beginning of the strike, we dread that as well.
Yeah. And it's always the people that have no fucking clue. They're always the ones that say shit.
Yeah.
That they do zero due diligence
on
what the rules are. They just want to say something. And And then they're not even worth addressing.
No. They just want to be heard, I guess, and everybody wants to. But I think you said it, the key. I think everybody, the listeners that want to break into the business and expand their career, what you said, adaptability. You are adaptable to say you could do a major. I mean, you just had a film with the Venice Film Festival.
Right.
Are you kidding me? I mean, are you joking? So, adaptability. You can go from one of the most prestigious, largest film festivals in the world. Right. I mean, George Clooney's walking these red carpets.
Yes.
So you're saying, look, you can adapt during these times and do something that's still a great production at a smaller budget.
Right.
So that's a lot about you and your creativity and what you're willing to do. That's huge.
Well, thank you. No, thank you. And like I said, that's pretty much it. Because, a lot of people that I know, and we probably know, would have said, I just won Venice. My next film has to either be bigger or I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Because I'm on my trajectory's up. I'm not doing anything less than, I think that budget was $3.5 million.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, so essentially, I wouldn't have shot anything since 2021.
I know, right?
Oh, no, sorry, 2020.
Yeah.
2021. So, I would have shot anything since in 2 years yet. I'd still be waiting to do something.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we got two seasons of Greg Hills, and, so, again, and you know, whatever your opinion is, that's just my opinion. I just don't want to sit and wait.
I love it.
Yeah. 51. Yeah. In my mind, I got, you know, X amount of years left.
Sure.
And I don't waste them waiting.
No, never. 100%.
So, yeah.
And right now, everybody can look at Great Kills on Tubi is available right now, season one.
Tubi now is on Amazon Prime. It's
right,
on
right.
Roku.
Yeah, okay. Oh, good. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, now everybody's taking it. But yeah. So, yeah.
No, that's fantastic. And Steve, any last words of advice to our listeners, young filmmakers, young entrepreneurs, anyone even just following their dreams, if you could just sum it up in like two sentences, what would you give them to walk away with?
Like I said earlier, don't talk shit, create shit. Don't be afraid to fail. You do you. Don't be the guy, the 80-year-old guy in the rocking chair wishing you did things a different way. I'd rather fail, do it in my way, than fail doing it somebody else's way. So if you dream, dream out loud.
You're absolutely right. And really, Steve, as Chris said, and I say it to you all the time, you really are an inspiration to both of us.
Yeah.
You're an inspiration to a lot of people out there. What you've done in this business is astronomical.
Thank you.
Really, thank you for taking the time to come here. You're an inspiration as a person, as a friend, as a filmmaker. Thank you so much. You deserve all your success.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to walk out of here.
thank you very much. Always a pleasure seeing you. Again, this has been the Live Your Dreams podcast. I'm Joe Gowalis.
Chris Victor.
Our great guest, Steve Stanulis. You can check out, again, Great Kills on Tubi. A lot of his films. Check him out, Steve Stanulis. You can Google him. You can look him up on Tubi. A lot of great films through his production company. Thank you again from the Live Your Dreams podcast. Remember now, like, subscribe. Check us out on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, among everywhere else you get your podcast. And we'll see you next week. Thank you so much.